Welcome to the No One Fights Alone podcast. This podcast is dedicated to mental wellness for first responders and beyond. Through powerful stories, personal experiences, and expert insights, we explore the challenges and triumphs of maintaining resilience in the face of adversity. Together, we remind you, no one fights alone.
Welcome back, No One Fights Alone podcast. This really is kind of the official season opener of season five, even though you just heard Austin and I do a podcast Tuesday. Today is about what season five is going to look like, and I have two great friends on here that Austin's handing the reins over to. Ben Pearson, you all have heard, our clinical director. Ben, welcome to the podcast. As the host, a co-host, welcome. And Max Morgan, that you all have heard from previously. Max is taking the reins as co-host as well. And we're going to try to double our efforts here to try to get more podcasts out to you. You as the listeners have spoken. You like hearing these podcasts. So we're going to try really hard to double our efforts. And I really am excited about having both these guys. I love working with these guys. I love bantering with them. I love talking with them. They're insightful. Their depth of both knowledge and experience and character is amazing. And I just want to welcome you both on as co-hosts. Thank you for coming on and sharing.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Brad.
Excited good to be here.
Well, let's give the listeners a little bit of a teaser. And Ben, let's take off with you as a co-host. And there's really no rhyme or reason, but I know you've done this and you've been on several of our podcasts and you love being on here. You've verbalized that to me on several occasions that you enjoy these. And what do you have any excitement for the season? I mean, what are your thoughts on coming in as sitting in the co-host seat instead of the interviewee seat?
Right. Well, I'd be lying if I didn't say that I'm nervous about the switch, but overall, I'm excited about the opportunity. One of the things I was telling Brad is we were talking about this year and shifting some things a little bit is I do want to get a bit more into not only some of these interviews and some of these awesome guests that we have, but also want to put an extra, maybe a perspective, maybe give a little bit more of the mic to some of the family experience and some of the more dynamic stuff that happens that people deal with after the podcast is over. Hoping to have some more practical elements to it so people can hear some cool stories, be inspired, get connected, not feel like they're as isolated as they thought they were, and then have some practical takeaways of what do we do from here forward and what can I take to my family and to my relationships today. So I'm excited about that part. I'm excited to just have more opportunities to hang out with you guys, but also a chance just to hopefully broaden the conversation a little bit. Hopefully I can be useful to someone.
I love that. I love that. And I do have some things to add to that, but I want to give Max the mic as well. Max, thanks for coming on. And again, same. Thank you for volunteering to co-host. What are your thoughts on sitting in the co-host chair from here on? Anything?
Yeah, no. Thank you for having me. I'm excited for the opportunity. It's I've been on a few podcasts, been able to kind of share some of my story through a few podcasts. So a little bit of a different switch to jump into the co-host chair, but I'm excited for it. We've already done a couple. It's been really good. I think it's a great opportunity. I'm excited to, like I said, with my chance to be able to tell my story a bunch, I'm excited to hear other people's stories and share some insight and listen to them and listen how they have gone through their stories and fought and come out on the other end. And like Ben said, with the family stuff, I mean, families are affected just as much as, you know, we are as first responders. And I think it's a good way to go to talk about families and how this affects families and what we can do to strengthen our families through this whole thing. So I'm just excited. I get to hang out with you two guys, and what could be better?
Well, I do. Yes, agreed. I do think that having some, you know, some intentionality behind some of the direction, not just the direction that we haven't just been willy nilly through it, but I do appreciate Ben's perspective on, and we've had several conversations to this about looking at the family, and that's been some of our most desired podcasts. I think still the most downloaded podcast has been Liz and Scott Brown's marriage, where they got really vulnerable. And that speaks volumes to, you know, as to what people are really looking for and what they're trying to find insight into and answers to problems at home. And, you know, I think this will be a fun season to see where we go. We're not going to ignore, you know, some of the stories. We just, like Max said, we just finished up one that was a pretty gut-wrenching story of pain and hurt, and now moving into healing and hope. But I do agree. This is going to be fun. I'm looking forward to the season.
Me too.
If we actually looked at the, you know, the intentionality behind not just families, but actually this messaging that we do to all folks, I feel like our audience originally was going to be somewhat in the recovery niche. And what we found is it's not at all. It's actually pretty wide open, but specific to all first responders and families, which is why I think, Ben, you have such a passion for this. Have you had feedback like that from people on this?
I think so. I think it's interesting that when we dive into this kind of stuff, or when we even think about change, I think that's most people have some opinions about how much change they actually make in the world, how much change they're expecting, what do they want? And as we've talked about different topics over the course of the last few years, I think I'm really inspired when people talk about they want to make a change immediately in their home and their relationships. But what I keep on hearing is people becoming more thirsty and a little bit more motivated to figure out how they're going to change their culture at work and some of their friend relationships and some of those kinds of things. And so I think that that stuff is exciting. I love that when I'm traveling or get to talk with some of the clients in the program, that they report these stories, and they won't immediately recognize that part of what is happening is that they're starting to believe in themselves in this process more than they were before, and recognize that they were stuck for a long time and didn't think that the family culture or the work culture was ever going to change. And now they're starting to see some of these pieces happen and they want to be involved. That's the cool stuff I get to hear about.
And I think one of the beauties of the podcast is you're able to, I think the best way to heal and to work through your stuff and through your own situation is to be able to listen to other people who have been through similar circumstances. I mean, not all situations are exactly the same, but you know, when I went through some of my stuff, I felt like that nobody else understood me. Nobody else had ever seen and done any of the things that I had done. And I felt like I was on an island all by myself. And when I was able to start working through some stuff, and I was able to find out that, hey, other people have maybe not been through the exact same thing, but similar circumstances, and other people related to what I had seen, what I had gone through, and situations like that. That was one of the most healing things for me, and for me to be able to say, okay, now I need to work on, you know, where do I go from here? And so I think the beauty of the podcast is we get to hear stories, we get to share our perspective of things that we've gone through. And once other people realize, man, I'm not the only one, I'm not out here on an island by myself. There is other people that have been through this. I can learn from them. I can take some good from them, you know, what the perspectives that they have, and they can, and feel like they've got help and feel like they've got people in their corner and able to move forward.
Oh gosh. I think that is so true. I think there's such a strong argument to be made for just listening. You know, I don't think all things should be hidden, and I certainly don't think they should be hidden forever, but there is this quiet strategy of just driving down the road and realizing, hey, I'm not the only one. There are other people that experience this. And I love stealing Ben's adage on the courage of that component of taking these small steps of courage. And Ben, you say it all the time, but these little moments of courage where you hear that and you say, okay, maybe I should reach out to a friend. And I was just talking to a guy today who called me, and I told him, I said, I just want to pause a minute and acknowledge the courage it took for you just to call me. Let's at least acknowledge that, you know, and because he was minimizing, well, I might not be that bad, or maybe I'm not, you know, screw all that. You picked up the phone. You knew something was off, and you picked up the phone and you called me. Let's at least base out there. And I think this podcast is a catalyst to be able to do that. And I of just saying, hey, I'm not alone. Maybe I should make a phone call. And those are, it takes a lot of courage to do that. And oftentimes it's almost too difficult to do if you don't have that connection. And I feel like that's a strong component of why this podcast has been so successful.
Right. Yeah. And I think too, when people, we have our people that have been first responders for years and years and years. And, you know, as back as recent as 5 years ago, this still wasn't talked about very much. When we had issues at work and things we were struggling with, we still didn't talk about it very much. And I think with the podcast, people are able to, you know, maybe some of our older guys that have been in the industry for a long time, they're starting to listen to this and go, man, it's okay. It's okay if I talk about this. It's okay. I mean, I don't need to hold in this tough exterior that, you know, I'm big, bad, mm-hmm. nothing affects me. And because, you know, even if they're listening in their car or somewhere all by themselves, you know, I would bet that there's some stuff resonates with them and they may get a little teary eyed and go, man, maybe it's okay for me to talk about this stuff. Maybe I should talk about this stuff. Cause I mean, we're changing that culture across the country. That it is okay to talk about it. It's okay to say that I need some help, and it's okay to go get that help.
Yeah. You know, I was at a moment, I was at a conference this last weekend, and it's funny as we talk about vulnerability and opening up and engaging and some of the toughest, most worthwhile work that we do, I think it's tough to start at that vulnerability place. And where I'm going with that is what I do think is possible is for us to get better at calling bullshit, because that's a skill that most of our first responders really appreciate about themselves. They think they're very gifted in that particular area. And I think there's something about calling bullshit that says I can make the world a little bit safer from a lie or from an injustice or something that's simply just, you know, not true or possibly dangerous. And I think that's a real skill that is important. And what I'm trying to get at is what I think is interesting is I think there, when it comes to whether it's mental health or this cultural change or helping to interrupt some of these patterns and trends that go on for generations, I don't know if we've always felt, especially as men, permission to call bullshit on stuff that is purely toxic sometimes. And that we say words like vulnerability, and I think they're incredibly important. But I think there's, if anything, I had a moment in this conference where I was watching folks that you could tell weren't totally sold on the idea of being vulnerable. They didn't associate that with courage quite yet. And what they were good at is offering a little critique, and the critique often was about bullshit. Anyway. I thought it was really interesting that part of what we get to do in this podcast and these conversations is to say, here's some bullshit that just doesn't make sense. It didn't work for your dad, didn't work for your grandfather, it didn't work for your kid. And here we are still holding very tightly to some of these things, assuming that any minute now we're going to become helpful to people while we believe in some bullshit. So I really hope as we talk about the, you know, kind of the goals for this upcoming season, but even just the podcast, I hope there are moments where we can stop because so many times in this culture and many cultures, we just become so comfortable and so worn out with some of these messages. We become very complicit and a little jaded or indifferent to what kind of impact some of these things is really having in our lives. And I do want to make sure that we're a place we can say, that's bullshit. You have more choices than you thought. You're not as isolated as you thought you were. And in a way, it is a message of love, of like, it is bullshit what you're thinking. It is bullshit what you've been told. And there's no reason why we have to keep on cooperating with this. And it's okay for us to protest and do something different about it.
And sometimes it takes that exact language for us to understand, right? Because we speak a different language.
Right.
And if you try and sugarcoat it and use clinical terms and everything else, you know, a lot of times it just goes right over our head in one ear and out the other. But yeah, when you call it bullshit and you use terminology that we understand, we're like, oh, our heads poke up and we're like, oh, okay, I get that. I understand that now.
And you need a therapist who's not very good at therapy to help you do that.
That's my job. Thanks for coming on, Ben. Well, I think when you say one of the things that stood out in that is being complicit. When you said it, I thought, wow, that resonates differently, because that implies that you're adding to the problem just by the sheer nature of ignoring. Like I'm ignoring a problem, so now I'm complicit because I'm a part of it and not doing anything. Man, that really resonates differently. And still, we're still in this courage moment of raising your hand and saying, I don't agree, or I'm going to say something, or you know, whatever. I'm going to make that phone call, or I'm going to have that conversation, or, you know, I'm going to tell somebody. But that resonates differently. I love the way you put that. Yeah.
It's supposed to bother us.
It should. Yeah,
I've used the term before, especially in groups, that you know, it'd be great if all of us changed because we saw the light and we're just inspired and there was this internal drive. But the reality is that most of us change because we feel the heat. And sometimes that heat is going to come in the form of anger. Our spouse or our kid is going to be honest enough and say, This is exactly what you're not doing for me. And this is how you might even hurt me. And that is going to hurt and push us in a different way. And I hope that one of the functions of these conversations that we can do something with that anger and do something with that defensiveness and do something with that irritation, and that we can channel it into something pretty productive as opposed to the old routine that most of us are pretty good at.
That's just how I am.
And one of my favorite things about the anger, one of my favorite questions to ask the guys at Chateau is, did you come here on your own and happy, or did you come here kicking and screaming? And I love to hear when people say they came kicking and screaming, you know, they're pissed off at their wife or their kids or their boss or whoever. And then to watch that change throughout the weeks at Chateau. And because there's a lot of people that come here pissed off, kicking and screaming and, you know, mad at the world. Right. So
super agree.
I didn't start kicking and screaming until I got there. That was
that's how sophisticated your anger was.
Well, I'm really excited about the season and the lineup. We've already, like Max said, we've already had a few interviews. We've got we're starting to stack up some of our interviews. But we have some things on family. We have some things on grief. We have some things on, we've got both the painters in this community that I love. We've already had, Dan, Sundahl and Paul Combs is coming on. We've got some, and some family things, some family organizations. I just really am excited about the season, and that's just my take. I know both of you have some folks that you're looking at getting lined up, and I'm really excited about the season. And I know last year, between, you know, my hurdles personally, and I'm going to talk more about that this season as well, because it plays into Ben what you were talking about. But you know, Austin's new move, and you heard from him last Tuesday. Everybody heard from him last Tuesday. Is kind of handing over the reins, and that was pretty emotional. Austin, it was hard. It was actually hard on both of us to have that that conversation. And I, cause I love that boy and we had a lot of fun doing it, and not to look backward, but to look forward. I look forward to doing this with both of you and bringing people on and having some laughs, having some tears. I mean, just it's really is fulfilling to be a part of this. And I cannot tell you how excited I am to have both of you on there.
Yeah, no, I'm the same. Like I said, we've talked about it for a little bit, and I've got, you know, hopefully some good ideas of people we can bring on the podcast, that people that I know that I think their stories will be very impactful and that people will love. You know, Scott and Liz Brown, they're friends of mine, that great podcast. And then the people that we've already got on the schedule, it's just going to be a fun and exciting year. I'm excited.
Let's do this. We have a little bit of time left. I usually try to aim for a shorter podcast when it's just us shooting the shit, but, let's do this. Let's reintroduce both of you a little bit. Maybe a little bit of your background and how you ended up where you are and what you're doing. And because both of you are very uniquely different in that capacity. And Ben, I know you're officially the clinical director, but there's so much more to who you are. And Max, you're a Utah County deputy, but there's so much more to who you are. How about Ben, let's start with you. Just tell the listeners a little bit of who you are and kind of a reintroduction of sorts on a co-host level.
Yeah. Yeah. First and foremost, I'm a Capricorn, so that should tell you nothing. I don't know what any of that stuff even means, but, no, I'm a father of five. I'm the sixth of eight kids. I grew up in South Dakota, and, most of my experience early on with law enforcement was watching my brother get hauled away. That's the bulk of my experience early on. Not inspiring. In fact, I'll share my first experience that I had with firefighters. I was a little turd of a kid. And the first time that I remember actually learning anything from playing with matches was I was 5 years old. I live in the middle of nowhere, and I almost killed myself and my sister as I played with matches instead of a barn that my family was leasing. And then my first takeaway lesson was, after I lit these matches, tossed them obviously in the wrong spot, and we're walking back to my house as a kid, and I turn around and see this massive just wall of flames. And then all these cool folks come to my house, and I think, man, this is amazing. But you know what? I don't understand what's so cool about these firefighters I've been hearing about so much. They just come to your house and just watch your shit burn. not the best takeaway lesson, but that was my takeaway. It's interesting. I've been doing clinical work for the last 21, 22 years now. I've done it with families in homes. I've done it in treatment facilities, outpatient facilities. I've got my own baggage, which in my opinion is one of them. I think it's essential to my story. Whether it's the suicide ideation I had as a kid in high school, whether that's challenges with academics and learning, connecting socially with kids, and a number of other challenges. I'm a firm believer that our suffering is essential to our growth, that there's no way around it. If we look at it, if we study it, if we get better at looking at some of these prickly, ugly, and sometimes shameful parts of ourselves, I do think we become a better instrument for healing in other people's stories. I'm a huge believer in that. So I do think with any of this kind of work, and as we talk about this kind of work, I think all of us need to constantly show back up at the mirror, do that inventory, and talk about it. Because there's usually someone, you know, half a step behind us that really didn't see it and is eager to grow and to be empowered, but we have to keep on talking. So I've been a clinician for the last 11 years with Chateau Recovery. Within that, my role is to help build curriculum, help do some training with the staff and the clinicians. Thankfully, we've got an awesome, you know. house of clinicians that don't need much direction. They all have their individual gifts and have some pretty inspiring stories themselves. So for me, I, in the last number of years, have been able to go out and do some more trainings, do some more presentations, and kind of represent, which represent the Lucky Fuckers Club, as we refer to it at the Chateau. And yeah, it's an honor to be around that. I tell the group often that it's one of the coolest parts of my job. I get to be around people who are climbing mountains and facing some pretty horrible stuff, and they're still standing. And it is constantly a reminder that I can do a little bit more and do it more often. So I feel very fortunate to get to be a part of this and get to be around just cool folks that in their own minds do not see themselves as inspiring. They don't see the struggle as something very virtuous. And if anything, they're pretty hesitant as they head back home after a lot of healing, and they're kind of nervous of how to frame it and how to talk about it because their culture is often just not ready yet. So I'm stoked I get to be around all of that. And yeah, I get to be next to some really cool people in that process.
I'm actually glad you brought that up, because I was actually just telling Max before our interview today my experience with interviewing first responders and their stories. It's not necessarily the case with industry professionals that we have on or organizational leadership, but the stories, it really resonates deeply that they don't feel like their story brings a whole lot to the table. But yet when you unpack that story, it's incredible. A journey of pain and healing and suffering and joy, wrapped up into one. And oftentimes, tell Max, oftentimes, they're so, other people's stories are important, but mine's not, is the take a lot of the people have. And I think what you just said there is a validation to some of the interviews we have on. Well, I hope my story can resonate. And then next thing you know, we've got people calling in saying, I'm so glad, Max told his story, or, something right along those lines. It's so apropos. Yeah. Max.
So my name is Max Morgan. I am a deputy with the Utah County Sheriff's Office. Currently, I've been there about 17 years, almost 17 years. Grew up here in Utah for the most part. I did spend from the age of 2 to 5 in South Dakota, like Ben. I don't remember my brothers getting hauled off. I remember watching my brothers get in a lot of fights, but I spent about 13 years as a volunteer firefighter and an EMT here in the town that I grew up in Springville. Started at the sheriff's office late in life. I got in a little bit late at the age of 35. And so I, about 10 years ago, overview of my story, just a little over 10 years ago, I had a coworker of mine that went home and ended up killing his mother-in-law, his wife, and then his 2 kids, and then himself, and ended up at that house that night on that call. And my job was to sit in the car with the first police officer that went in the house and found them, and to kind of babysit him that night and whatnot. Anyway, this was a kid that I'd worked with for several years, and this just kind of threw me for a loop. About 7 days after that, my wife and I decided that the best thing for our marriage was for me to move out of the house. And so I packed up everything I owned into a little Honda Accord and pulled out of the driveway, feeling completely worthless and like the biggest loser in the world, and went and lived at my brother's house. 5 days after that, which was 11 years ago yesterday, my sergeant was shot and killed on duty. And I was the first one on scene that found him after he'd been murdered. So I had, in a span of about 10, 12 days, just a series of events that just really started to throw me for a spiral downward. I was living at my brother's house. I'd go home at night, sit in my little bedroom and drink way too much. And drink till I'd get blackout drunk. I'd tell everybody at work I'm doing fine. With the isolation came the suicidal ideations. And just a bad time for me. Several months later, I got a phone call from an individual from California that said he wanted me to go to a COPS co-workers retreat. So that's when I was introduced to the concerns of police survivors world. And I went kicking and screaming, like we talked a minute ago, to this first co-workers retreat. And essentially, this is what saved my life. And I got to go to this retreat where I got to be around other people that had been through similar circumstances that understood me, understood what I was going through. And I left that retreat that weekend feeling much better. I mean, I wasn't great, but I was doing a lot better. That was in September of 2014. In February of 2015, my brother Matt, who's just older than me and was my best friend, decided that pulling the trigger was the best option for him. And he died on Valentine's Day of 2015. And that just threw me completely back down to the ground. I didn't know where to go from there. And the crazy thing was, is the people that called me, the people that showed up at my door unannounced, were some of these coworkers from that coworkers retreat. And so anyway, these guys instantly became the people. They were my people, people I could count on, people that were there for me. People similar to like an SLP, that these were the people that I would call when times were rough, when we were having bad days. And then a few months after that, in July of 2015, my daughter was in a car wreck where she rolled off a cliff. She was ejected out of the car. Then the car landed on top of her. And we lost her once in life flight. They ended up getting her back. But it's been a long, hard road with her. 28 surgeries within about 35 days for her. And anyway, so she came back home in October of 2015. So kind of about a 2-year span of holy shit, what else does God want to give me? You know, I played the poor pitiful me, you know, what have I done to deserve this? Why me? You know, all that stuff. 21 months after I moved out of the house, my wife and I decided to not give up, and I moved back into the house. So kind of a little bit of an update. In March of this year, we'll celebrate our 29th anniversary. I don't know why she's stuck with me, but she has.
I have no idea either.
Five. I don't know.
It's your sweet haircut. This is a really easy one for me. I can answer this one.
Yeah.
So. Exactly. So I say, you know, update for today. I have a smoking hot wife. I have 5 kids, 3 daughters, 2 boys. I have 3 son-in-laws, and I have 4 amazing grandkids. And life is amazing. And when I look back at how close I was to ending everything, it scares the crap out of me. I just am very, very glad that I was able to find somebody to help me, an organization that helped me. So I get to come to Chateau on Fridays, and I get to be part of the first responder groups, and I love it. I love talking with everybody. I'm not a clinician. I'm just a guy that's kind of been through his own share of shit. And, you know, I'm the same way. I've kind of thought for a long time when I've been asked to tell my story, I'm like, man, I don't know if there's anything that impactful about my story. I don't know if anybody's going to get anything from it, but I have had the opportunity several times across the country to tell that story. And I've come to learn that from people coming up to me afterwards, phone calls, emails, things like that, that it is impactful to some people, which I'm grateful for. And hopefully it helps some people, and even to get other people to start sharing their story, because it's very healing to be able to talk about it.
Of course.
So yeah, that's kind of who awesome. I am.
No, it really is. Invigorating to think about what the season looked this year and what it holds with, the three of us. Obviously I don't mind getting on a mic and talking and sharing, but having both of you on here, the depth of knowledge and character and knowledge is just, I think it's really exciting. We're going to have a fun year. We're going to have a fun time. Thanks for that.
I'm excited.
Anything, let's wrap up and bail off. Anything you guys want to add on to that before we tell the listeners?
Nope, I'm just excited week? For the year.
Yep, sounds great.
Yeah, we're going to have a good time.
Looking forward to it. Yeah, good. Yeah, same. I am too. All right. Well, listeners, stay tuned. We got an exciting season coming. We're going to have a lot of fun. We'll see you guys soon.
Thanks.
See you guys.
Chateau Health and Wellness is a 16-bed treatment facility nestled in the foothills of the Wasatch Mountains in Midway, Utah. Chateau's first responder resiliency program is designed to treat the unique challenges and issues that first responders encounter in the course of their careers. Chateau's comprehensive and highly individualized approach to treatment addresses more than just the presenting issues. It addresses the why. Each of their seasoned, trauma-trained, and culturally competent therapists utilize evidence-based, specialized therapies to treat trauma at its core and enable clients to begin the healing process while developing a resilient and healthy relationship with stress. Chateau Health and Wellness is trusted by departments and agencies from around the country to treat responders and veterans. In fact, it is one of only a handful of facilities nationwide that is vetted and approved to treat members of the Fraternal Order of Police. For more information or to speak to a representative, go to chateaurecovery.com or call 888-507-5031.